Sun's starting to come out. It's 7 o'clock. Good morning, 97.1. We got two Grand Slam at 7:25 and a college football frozen in time at 7:35.
Mm-hmm.
John, you brought up Lions hangover.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
It is.
It's lingered from last year much longer than the year before.
Mm-hmm. We're all the way in June, and there's still people that not that you have to get over the loss, but you got to find a way to deal with it and start looking forward to next year.
And you've been trying to give people hangover cures, telling them the sky's not falling. What about actual hangovers?
Yeah, so my worst hangover actually happened in college. Not that there haven't been more since then, but it was we had what we thought figured out the off-season workout schedule from our strength coach, Mike Gittleson. And we were heading into a weekend where, you know, we had a workout. I think it was a Saturday morning, but it was going to be kind of a lighter one, right? You had a couple of tough workouts. You always had a kind of a lighter one on Saturday leading into the weekend. So some of us had decided to go out, have a good time.
Yeah.
One thing led to another. We had a great time. And then we show up the next morning thinking that it was going to be a light workout. And you could smell the booze. And it was coming out of, obviously, our breath, our pores. It was oozing out of us. I think Mike Gittleson, our strength coach, Mike witnessed that, understood that. And the worst or maybe the best hangover cure was a Mike Gittleson workout. We had guys puking all over the place.
Oh, God.
It was awful. But by the end of it, and it lasted a couple hours, felt great.
Sweat it out.
Oh, sweat it out. And maybe it's...
Puke it out.
Yeah, puke it out, sweat it out, get it out of your body and work it out. It just was... It was an awful 2 hours. Yeah, but by the time I was done, I was ready for the rest of the day.
Yeah, but it's the last thing you want to do.
Hey, now we don't have to work out tomorrow. Hey, let's go! Who's pouring?
Ticket text 248-539-9797. Hangover cure, warm ginger ale. That's from Dave.
Oh, that sounds awful.
I mean, I guess you get ginger ale when you're sick.
Yeah.
I used to anyway.
Sure. Like ginger ale and crackers, saltines.
Yes, it's saltines. Yeah.
But warm? Oh. Part of what the ginger ale is the bubbles. It's the
carbonation.
The ginger. Mm-hmm. And you warm it up. Like, just go with some ginger tea at that point. I think that would just be awful.
With you guys, greasy, potato-based, cheesy, pork-laden breakfast food is the ultimate hangover cure.
It is, but then you just, or I do anyway, I don't feel hungover anymore. I just feel ill. Like, I just ate all of this nasty food. The hangover's gone, but now I feel ill.
I feel like I just had a great breakfast.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Maybe don't need a lunch, but I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Make you back up. Water, water, water before you go to bed, and the banana needs to be eaten before you go to bed, not in the morning, makes a huge difference, unnamed texture.
Yeah, I mean, part of the worst hangover is when you know it's coming and you're done for the night, but you lay down and the room is just spinning.
Yep.
You try and sit up and you think, well, if I sit up,
nope,
the room will stop spinning, and then it makes it worse.
Head on the pillow, ride it out, wake up, do the best you can.
Yes, it's a terrible feeling.
No hangover. How about rooting for the Michigan Panthers? Championship game Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the one.
One plus one. I'll be watching.
John is also watching. Mm-hmm. Ticket texters. I don't think I had a hangover until I was listening to the show this morning, and now I'm over it. Let's go Lions. Zach in a work van.
There we go.
John's giving people that banana
mission
today. Best hangover cure was drinking lots of water while drinking. Proactive is better than reactive. Hangover cure is Taco Bell and more booze. And the Lions hangover is sticking around because Valeni moans and groans every afternoon. Dude is the equivalent of someone vacuuming the morning after you go out.
the wake up, the wake up vacuum noise.
Make it stop.
Mm-hmm.
248-539-9797. There is light at the end of the tunnel here. We have some audio to play. National media talking about the Lions yesterday. So this is FS1. We have two different clips. It's from the same show. You got Mark Schlereth and you have Danny Parkins. It's Breakfast Ball. You want to start with Schlereth? Start with an offensive lineman perspective. Everybody's talking about the sky falling in Detroit. Here's what Schlereth had to say. I feel like I've heard that before from a different offensive lineman.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like I was talking about this a year and a half ago when we thought we might lose Ben Johnson to the Commanders or anybody else that was looking for a coach 2 years ago. We lose him to Chicago, and what have I been saying? This is Dan Campbell's offense. When it wasn't running the way he wanted with Anthony Lynn, what did he do? He changed his responsibilities, ended up, you know, getting rid of him, but he took over the play calling. And it wasn't until like a week before the 23 season before he handed the play calling off and made it official that Ben Johnson would be calling plays, but only because he felt like, okay, yes, he is going to call this. He's got the picture. He understands what it's supposed to look like, how it's supposed to be operated. And if that hadn't gone according to plan, Dan Campbell still would have taken over. This is his offense. And whether it's Anthony Lynn, it's Dan Campbell, it's Ben Johnson, now John Morton, it is going to be his offense. And I think one of the most important things that he said there was Dan Campbell understands the X's and O's. He understands personnel, the strengths, the weaknesses of each individual. And what do we know that the weakness going into the season is going to be, or the perceived weakness? Interior offensive line. How do you protect him? You run the ball. How do you protect him in pass protection? You run play action pass. What is this Lions offense based on? Running the ball, play action pass, and every once in a while when you're in, you know, passing situations, that's where it's really going to become important for Dan Campbell to understand, how do I protect that middle of that offensive line, which is the easiest to protect,
but also the most important because it's the fastest path to the quarterback.
Understand that.
Look, I think it'd be easy for me to make the joke that meatheads stick together, you, Schlereth, and Campbell. But I want to give Campbell more credit than that. He's not just a meathead.
I would like to think that in the transitive properties work as well. If you're giving him credit as a meathead, that I get a little bit of that as well.
I did not say that. Dan Campbell, I think, is more than just the guy he is perceived to be. I agree with you. I agree with when you said it. Over a year ago, Dan Campbell's offense is here, whether Ben Johnson is here. My issue is, you guys are offensive linemen. The Ragnow thing shouldn't be glossed over. That's the biggest reason to be concerned is...
We're not glossing it over. I'm giving you ways that you can play with that offensive line okay. and still be very successful.
The other clip, Danny Parkins, is kind of just glossing over it. Oh, anybody would be successful in Detroit. This is the other clip.
So he did gloss over the offensive line. Yeah, like it's not a number two offensive line anymore.
Which to me is the anchor. It's the bedrock foundation. It's why play action works, because they run. Well, why can they run? Because they have a great offensive line. That is the thing that I think Ben Johnson is going to struggle with in Chicago is he knows he needs to rebuild their offensive line. They were very aggressive, but he knows he doesn't have Detroit's offensive line. And you know who doesn't have Detroit's offensive line? Detroit. So we are also going to be dealing with some of that too. It's not as just turnkey, plug and play, we're going to win up front with our five.
No, it's not. But it can be. It certainly can be. And going into the season, if you're sitting there looking at, if it's Tate Ratledge, that's your center, no one is going into the season going, top five center. In fact, there's no way to say that he could be a top five center or a top 10 center, but he doesn't have to be.
I think to win the Super Bowl.
He just has to be sufficient at the beginning of the season because you can make it a little bit easier on those guys. It's much easier than it is trying to cover up the deficiency at tackle.
Because you're on an island more.
You're going to have to block one-on-one more. And those guys, I'm confident, obviously more in Penei Sewell than Taylor Decker, but they're going to be good, which allows the development of that offensive line in the interior and for them to add protection, for them to be able to structure it so that it is, I don't want to say simple, maybe simple in assignment, but the execution
do it.
Is going to be one where they're going to be able to be in position for success.
Some ticket text. They love the vacuuming analogy. Say most accurate comparison ever.
Yeah.
And says every single afternoon the sky is falling. We like to vacuum in the morning too, Rico, Dave, and Ken. My hangover cure starts when Hendon Hooker my hangover ends when Hendon Hooker starts, signed Jamar in Westland. Yeah. And pickles or pickle juice, another vote for hangover cures.
Super quick on this departure of an OC, though. The thing with what Danny Parkin said is that, to me, that usually applies to teams that already won a championship. When you lose your coordinators.
That is turnkey.
Yeah. You know, like, it never affected the Patriots. It hasn't affected the Chiefs. Well, they have some of the greatest quarterbacks of all time and stuff. So I think you're getting a little presumptive there. But I kind of understand what he's saying, too. I think Dan Campbell runs it. I think it goes through Campbell.
Yeah.
100%. There's also a text that says, Tom is actually the smarmiest member of the radio station, more so even than me.
I couldn't resist giving that to you. I don't know what I did this morning to get that. Like yesterday,
you had an Iserman moment.
Yeah, we were talking about best GMs and how Harris is rivaling up to Holmes a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, we know who the worst GM is. It was just like you. It was like on point.
Like reflexively.
Yes.
Which is like me. Just I can't help it. Yeah. It's just there.
It's reflexively. Your influence.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone. Two Grand Slam, Heather's News, and college football frozen in time. It's all coming up. It's 97.1. All right, if you find yourself injured in a car accident, you need to get a law firm that cares about you. It matters. It's KG Law. That's the law firm I'd recommend. It's Lawrence KG and his team who are staffed up to get you the biggest possible payout and look after you in these moments where you're stressed and you're going through a lot of emotions. The phone number is 877-KG-CARES. You can check them out online, kgcares.com. That's spelled KAJY. You'll see what I'm talking about. You'll see the results. They're not cutting corners. They're not going to leave you in the dark. They're going to see you as more than a number. If you or a loved one has been injured in a car accident, you need to call KG Law now. That's kgcares.com, KAJY, kgcares.com. Before the Two Grand Slam, Heather, what's in the news?
Well, this is an interesting story that's kind of going viral. There was a recent Zoom court hearing that went off the rails after a Detroit mom made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich during the session. And she's going viral now because these Zoom court hearings are like shared on YouTube and somebody clipped it and then posted it on Instagram. And that's actually how obviously, she was there. She knew what she was doing, but she saw it back when she clicked on the link on Instagram. Was like, oh my goodness. The judge, of course, was not happy with this woman's decision to be preoccupied with PB&J. Also, she had on a robe over her outfit, so he wasn't happy about that either. She does want to clear the air a little bit. This woman, who was actually on the call for allegedly having an open alcohol container as a passenger in a car. It was a misdemeanor she was in court for. Says the incident basically comes down to the fact that she's a single mom. She was juggling a sick kid. She has a 3-year-old who is not feeling well. And then also her personal life. And she does say, yes, in hindsight, I should have handled this a little differently. She said, though, she was waiting in like the waiting room of the Zoom court hearing for hours.
Yeah.
And she's got this little one at home and she, you know, was trying to do all of that and do her Zoom court. She kind of wishes it could have been in person. She would have made a different impression, I think. And she says, you know, she does want to apologize for how it all went down. So
I think it would be easier to not be in person, though, right?
Well, no, I mean, maybe because she could be home with her daughter,
right? It would be harder to get childcare and be there for hours at the courthouse. It's at your convenience to do a Zoom.
However, if she was able to get childcare, she could have been there and been more ready and focused on what was at hand than being at home where you are juggling. Well, she's still a mom, right? You can't, if you're home with your daughter or your son or your children or whatever you've got, that's what you're doing too. So yes, it is supposed to be convenient to have a Zoom call, but it's not always convenient. We all know that if we've done Zoom meetings, we've seen it before.
But she could have made the same accommodations she was going to make at the courthouse that day from home.
You are right. Yes, she could have. Takes a village
to
raise these children, Jim.
You just really want to hammer a single mom, don't you?
My goodness. So, anyway, it's going viral.
That's what I meant.
Oh, jeez.
I'm a happily married man.
Jim.
Anyway, the Michigan State Police are warning residents not to be fooled by this new text scam that claims to be from the state of Michigan DMV, which, shocker, we don't have DMVs here in Michigan.
Right.
We have Secretary of States, but be careful because the text states that you have an outstanding ticket, threatens various legal actions, including suspension of your driver's license if you don't pay a fee within a few days. Of course, there's a link as well. don't click on the link. They're saying, hey, there's so many red flags here. One, like I said, we don't have the DMVs here. We have Secretary of States. Plus, the Secretary of State will never request payment via text message. So don't click on the link. They say delete the text and move on. Now, the reason I had this in my news is because somebody I know had this sent to them. And
oh, I get these text messages all the time.
Same. And it happened to be that there was a little confusion with a ticket recently.
Oh, so they fell for it.
Didn't, but called and was like, what do you think about this? And I said, it was my mom. We don't have
You've been outed.
Well, so I told you about this, right? She was driving my car, got pulled over in my car, and I didn't have my tabs renewed. I had no, completely slipped my mind. So she was the one that got a ticket, even though it was my car. We took care of that for her, made sure everything was good. But then she gets this text and she's like, Heather, what's going on? And I'm like, don't click the link.
Yeah. John, you get the same text. It says DMV. It says toll roads. I'm like,
roads.
We don't have any toll roads.
But
if you travel, and it doesn't necessarily say state of Michigan, and so if you travel around Chicago, there's toll roads, and they don't have the toll booths anymore. You just they're going to send you the bill in the mail, all that stuff. Like it can be enticing to, because people get the fear factor.
And if you recently had a situation like my mom did, where there was something kind of going on, and we handled it right because I was the one that had to go take care of everything. She didn't know if it was handled properly. And then she got a little like, oh, and this is how they do it. Mm-hmm. People get a little nervous. Yep. If you're headed to the movies at an AMC theater this summer, you're going to see some commercials. So AMC Theaters announced that it will be adding commercials before movies. This is in addition to the trailers and the in-house ads that are already shown before film. So the new commercials go into effect July 1st, and these new ads, according to AMC, will be an opportunity for them to make some money because they're going to get a portion of the cut of the ad sales, as well as the company who's doing it. So they said this is a way we can make up some money, especially from the losses we had during the pandemic, right? We need a way to make some revenue, and this is one way we can do it. And of course, it's not the end of the world, right? But a lot of people had your reaction, John. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, great. More ads. We need.
You already try and predict the start time in regards to how many trailers are they going to show. And so if a movie starts at 6:30, you'll be like, okay, well, I'll show up at 6:45 so I can start the beginning of the movie. Because you don't want to be wasting a half an hour. Now all of a sudden there's going to be commercials as well.
It doesn't sound like a lot of them. In one ad I read, it would be one commercial in addition to everything else. Man, I haven't been to the movies in a long time, so we'll get over it. That's the thing. It's going to be what it is.
But if you're taking kids, like I don't go to the movies myself, but I will take Teddy. And if we're just simply waiting for that one to start, like he's got an expiration date and I want to make sure that we at least get to the movie.
It's true. It's true. All right.
Heather with the news.
Let's give away some money.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, today could be the day somebody could win $2,000. The game is super simple. 60 seconds, 10 questions, $25 for each question answered correctly, and $2,000 if our contestant can get all of them right.
Mm-hmm. Our contestant this morning is Isaiah in Brownstown. Good morning.
What's up, guys? Good morning.
Are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
Okay, good. So your time is going to start as soon as I start reading. If you don't know one, say pass. And if there's enough time, we'll get back to it. Here we go, Isaiah. Connor McDavid wears this jersey number.
67.
Edmonton is located in this Canadian province.
Ontario. Nope.
Matthew Tkachuk was born in this country.
Sweden.
What is the state capital of Maryland?
Pass.
This band had the 1999 hit "I Want It That Way."
Backstreet Boys.
Caitlin Clark plays for this WNBA team.
Fever.
Where did Doug Karsh go to college?
Pass.
Who played Red in Shawshank Redemption?
Josh, Morgan Freeman.
This PGA golf major begins on Thursday.
We got you with three. Three is a tough start, but you made a good recovery.
Not a hockey guy, I take it, Isaiah.
No, not really, unfortunately.
It's all right. You still made $75 this morning.
Mm-hmm. Better than zero.
That is not zero. You are correct. Thanks, Isaiah.
We'll get you on hold. Yeah, we'll get you paid. Thanks for calling. Thanks for playing.
The Two Grand Slam on Thursdays is brought to you by Femininio Law.
And Tuesdays.
Yes. Today's Tuesday. Yes, that's correct. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that tomorrow is the start of the weekend. But yes.
Still got a few days to go here. We'll go through it. We got to, did we get to the ninth question there?
We did.
She asked it, but I don't think he answered.
Okay, so we can go through all nine of the 10 then. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid wears this jersey number.
97. He said 67.
Edmonton is located in this Canadian province.
He said Ontario, and then he said, nope. you correct. He not knew. Incorrect, but Alberta.
Yeah, he knew he was not getting that one. Kachuk is born in this country.
Come on, man. United States. I actually told you guys this before. I'm like, somebody's going to get this wrong.
It would have made sense if he thought Canada because of the pattern. Mm-hmm. But then you got to think, Four Nations, that's supposed to be a big deal. Right. He fought the Canadians.
Yes.
State capital of Maryland. He passed.
Annapolis. Disdain.
This band had the 1990 hit, I Want It That Way.
He did get this one. Thank goodness.
Backstreet Boys.
John, would you have known
probably
that?
24. Yeah, I would have got that one.
Yes. We were debating that before you were in here. Caitlin Clark plays for this team.
Yeah, he jumped all over that one, Indiana Fever.
Doug Karsh, where did he go to college? I wish he would have guessed something.
Yeah, I know.
He should have guessed.
Yeah.
He probably could have gotten it.
Well, he may have said Michigan because you hear his voice on the games.
Right.
But it's Michigan State.
Yeah.
Really well done. Who played Red in Shawshank? He took a second. He composed himself.
Yes, Morgan
Freeman.
He got
Morgan Freeman. And this PGA golf major that begins on Thursday is...
U.S. Open.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we got three.
Oh, Isaiah.
Coming up next, college football frozen in time. Pick an era. It's 97-1.
Hey, you guys, it's Heather, and if you're like me, you like knowing what to expect, especially when it comes to your phone bill. Well, Verizon's got some big news for your peace of mind. For the first time ever, they're locking in low prices for 3 years. That's right, 3 years guaranteed with my plan. So if you're thinking about making the switch to Verizon, this is for you. You can get a single line for just $45 a month when you switch and bring your phone. That's Verizon's best price ever on unlimited welcome with autopay plus taxes and fees. And again, that price is locked in for 3 whole years. Because at Verizon, they've got your back, now and in the future. So go ahead, take one thing off your worry list. Visit your local Verizon store in Detroit and ask about their 3-year price guarantee today. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate. Additional terms and conditions apply.
John, you fashion yourself a college football fan.
I do.
As do I. As do many of our listeners. One of the hallmarks of college football is we like to complain about college football. Tale as old as time. No matter what era of the sport, there's always been griping. We want to play college football frozen in time. You pick the era where the game was its best. And we broke it down into four options. The first is pre-BCS.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking late 80s into the 90s. The split era national titles. And you can go back further if you'd like, but for the sake of keeping it relatively modern, about 1990 to 1997 is that split title era before the BCS. Then you have the BCS, which is 98 to 2013, where the computers have the power. 2014 to 2023 was the four-team playoff era with five power conferences, kind of an awkward fit. And then we have the current expanded playoff era, 12-team playoff, freeze it now, freeze it then, you tell us. 248-539-9797.
So I think the one common thread between all four of these eras is that there's no perfect system to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still tinkering with it, trying to get to that perfect playoff system. And I think this is going to be very generational answer. I would go back to the pre-BCS So, and I would include 80s in this as well, you know, but it's up to 97, not because that was, you know, my time in college football, but it was my time growing up where every bowl game seemed to have some type of importance. And yes, I know that the, you know, whether it was the AP poll, the coaches poll, it, you know, you go back all the way and you've got a number of different ways of crowning a national champion. While it wasn't perfect, it made, I want to go back to the days where January 1st, New Year's Day meant something. And there was important bowl games basically from, you know, noon until you went to bed at night. It was fun. It was exciting. There was history. There was just like, you just felt like that was the peak of the college football season. You didn't have guys opting out because they were meaningless bowl games. You didn't have an imperfect system. It was imperfect, don't get me wrong, where you've got five power conferences, somebody's left out because you've only got four, mm-hmm. and, you know, four places. And then it was, you know, 12 is too many. Well, okay, it's not too many. We're going to 16. NIL, guys sitting out, the portal. Like, I want to go back to what feels to me like a simpler time.
But I'll be the first to bring it up. You would return to an era where you were not crowned sole champion. You yourself had to split a national title, and that's the era John Jansen would pick, where you don't get a shot to play Nebraska to settle it on the field. That's the era of college football that you would freeze in time?
Yeah. And would I love to have played Nebraska? Sure. Would I still love to play Nebraska? Yeah. Let's grab the pads. Let's grab the helmets. Let's get it settled to this day. That's fine. But it's...
That's my biggest issue with pre-BCS is we had...
Supposed to have a big issue with the split national title.
I would think you would, yes.
That's the way it was set up at the time. We won all our games and we did everything we could. Same thing with Nebraska.
But John,
so I don't really particularly have an issue with it. But it doesn't take away from me celebrating that national championship.
No, I'm not saying they're going to take your ring away. It's fine. But in every other era we threw out, you would have a chance to be the sole legitimate national title with no arguments and bickering and what ifs and hypotheticals.
Yeah, I get that. And would I love to it for a selfish reason?
Well, you're answering the question. Pick one of the other eras then. It'd be better for you.
No, I don't want to because I like it. And part of it was not just my time playing, but it was my time watching. Growing up, knowing that whether it was Michigan and Washington in the Rose Bowl, or it was insert any Big Ten or, you know, formerly Pac-10, Pac-8, Pac-12 team playing in the Rose Bowl. And maybe that's what I just miss, the mystique of what the Rose Bowl used to mean, or all of the other games that were played on January 1. And it's the entire package, not just one part of that package.
Why this is a great thought exercise is it forces you to pick what you value, because you can't have it all. We've never had a perfect system in college football. For as much as we bicker about what's happening now and what's going to happen in the future, you realize we've always done this. So I didn't pick the pre-BCS era. I also didn't pick the BCS era because people forget how flawed that system was and how often we'd complain about that. We had a year where LSU and Oklahoma were playing in the national title while number one USC was left out. We had Auburn go undefeated with Cadillac Williams and Ronnie Brown and not play for the national title in the BCS era. We've had four times in the playoff era where the champ hasn't been one or two, which would suggest in the BCS era we may have left out one or two worthy champions. Mm-hmm. So I don't pick the BCS era. I also don't pick the four-team playoff because of the awkward fit. It's like I had a puzzle piece from a different puzzle. I got five power conferences for four playoff spots. And it's not just FSU, who went undefeated and didn't get to play. It's the little guy who never had a seat at the table, Central Florida or Western. And you know I don't know. Like sticking up for Western.
Well, I know that you like the gold star for everyone.
No, I like settling it on the field. I like getting the little guy at least a seat at the table. I would freeze it now before we go to 16 teams. I'd freeze it at 12, where conference titles matter. We're not cramming in a fourth, fifth, or a sixth team from the Big Ten or the SEC. I'd freeze it today, warts and all.
The reason I don't like the 14 playoff or the 12 or what is to be the 16 is because we all love debates. We love sports debates. It's what we do, right? It fuels the fire. But I don't like having a playoff committee say these are your top 12 teams. And because there's always going to be a 13, or there's going to be, you know, like, should Alabama have been a part of that?
But those debates are lesser.
They're lesser because we all believe that, you know, somebody in the top six or even the top four or even just the top two is going to be what is the eventual national title.
We had the number 8 seed win it last year.
Right, but that's because of the weird way that they were seeding things.
It still would have been a team that wasn't 1, 2, or 3.
I want a time where, and this is why you could pick any one of these eras and there's going to be flaws. I want a time where it's not a computer that is spitting out numbers, or it's a playoff committee that is telling you, well, we believe that these are the best teams. Whether it's 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, doesn't matter. I want an era where that is, there's no opinion in it.
John.
Greg.
The national champion was decided by the opinions of coaches and the opinions of sports writers. Not determining who's 13 or 14 or 12, but who's one, and that's it.
Yeah, your title was decided by writers.
For me, the entire space of college football outweighs that negative of that era, if that makes sense.
Because we're
picking what we deem to be more important. And I understand the whole concept of the national title. Trust me, I get that.
I think that's the most important thing, is how we determine a champion, not who plays on New Year's Day.
But it's about that's why I think this could be very generational, because my formative years, everything was about New Year's Day. It was about the Big Ten and the Pac-12. It was about these classic matchups in bowl games, and you had not as many bowl games. I don't remember exactly how many there were, but you, let's say there were 20 bowl games. But they all had some sort of significance, some more, some less, because of the programs that were playing in them. But it's the entire picture that was bowl season that was greater to me than what we have now.
Ticket, text, and phone calls, 248-539-9797. I don't understand your love for old bowl games. They were meaningless exhibitions then, and the national titles were voted by sports media. No thank you. Shocking. John picks the era he played. Also, his naivete when he says they are searching for the perfect playoff system is cute. They're only searching for the system that makes the most money.
No, that's right. They're searching for the system that makes the most money.
Multiple people on your side, though. Pre-BCS, I may be getting old, but it was awesome. That was the best era, 45-year-old guy in a car.
Right, and this has nothing to do with me playing. If it was about me playing, then I would want a playoff.
Definitely pre-BCS. At least some of the players were real college students. Getting a scholarship meant something. Bowl games meant something. The debate about national titles was fun. I miss it. We'll get some phone calls, ticket texts in the mix. It's 97.1.
America's favorite place to watch. Hey, maybe it's the bowl system. Maybe it's national championships. Could be championships at the pro level. That best place is Stadium Swim. It's located at Circa Resort and Casino. You can catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of the 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of the massive 40-foot tall high-definition screen located at Circa Resort and Casino. It's in downtown Las Vegas, and it's right there on Fremont Street. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com. Because I had breakfast. Now, that was true. Like to go back and let them know. Mike Gittleson never let us be a pound over 300 at that time until I left, and then Backus and everybody else, Hutch, was allowed to be 320.
That wasn't a program weight, is what you're saying.
No, it was not a program. And in fact, it was probably only 295.
So that is your best argument to throw it back, is Keith Jackson. Granddaddy of them all.
Oh, the granddaddy. Yeah.
Look, because what we're doing right now is college football frozen in time. Pick the era. They're all flawed. Yeah. The one you liked most.
To me, maybe it's because I wasn't doing sports debates at that time. I mean, I was having sports debates with other 14, 15-year-old kids. And, I mean, we were not as educated, but it was full of passion. And it was, to me, a simpler time. And things have just continued to get more and more complicated with so many more variables. And so you're basically picking an era where, okay, that's when I grew up. That's why it's probably more special to me. But you didn't even witness that era.
No, I mean, really, my sports viewing has been BCS and beyond.
Yeah.
And I said, give me the modern stuff. Warts and all, give me today. Give me these home site college football playoff games. Give me conference titles that feed in. Give me a seat for the little guy. Settle it on the field. No more hypotheticals and what ifs and shared national titles. But we want to hear from you guys. Pick an era. Pre-BCS, BCS, 4-team, or 12-team. Let's get to Vic in Bloomfield Hills. Vic, good morning.
Hi, how you guys doing?
What's up?
Good morning.
So I'm going to say the 4-team era of college football is the best. I'm a little biased because that's when I grew up mainly. I grew up in a transition between the BCS and the 4-team playoff. And every year in the BCS, I always felt like there was a team that was getting snubbed year after year. One good example that a lot of callers may be familiar with is the Michigan State team that went to the Rose Bowl and won it. That one loss team that only lost was to Notre Dame that went and got pummeled in a national championship game. I believe that Michigan State team deserves a shot at the national championship. So when you got a college football playoff era come in, everyone's like, oh my God, what's happening? And then you have a 4-seed Ohio State team come in and win it all. Then you have Clemson and Alabama year after year. You have Michigan getting over the hump after 2 years of playoff losses. Georgia going back to back. I think the storylines in the 4-team playoff were the most objective and also allowed for the best possible version of college football.
So, Vic, I mean, I would agree with you in regards to, again, yes, that's the era that you grew up in. So you know that more. You're more probably a lot more passionate about it. And for determining a national title, maybe that was the best. But I still think that if you're just simply trying to, you would leave teams out in that just like you would in the BCS era. I mean, Florida State.
Sure. I agree with that. But also, right, the reason why college football is so special is because perfection. Every regular season game is a national championship game. If Ohio State loses that game at the end of the year to Michigan, technically, they probably shouldn't get a chance at a national championship. That's why, like, all these upsets mattered so much in college football. So the teams that were the most perfect in that season got to contend for that national championship game.
That was such a good MSU team, that 2013 MSU squad. Had the big stand in the Rose Bowl against Stanford.
And
they would have been in a 4-team playoff.
But you also take into account all of the other things that are going on in college sports at that time. Because and if it's just simply national title, best way to pick a national title, a championship, I think we're heading in that direction. I don't think we're there yet, but
I think 12's enough. 12's enough.
I still don't like the whole committee voting on it because they're basically voting on it just like they did in the pre-BCS era.
But there are some guarantees. If you win the Big Ten, you're not going to be left out. So Michigan State that year would not be left out. They'd get to settle it on the field instead of in a hypothetical.
Right, but then you also have a part of the era that we're talking about is now you have guys, if they're not a part of that 4-team playoff, now they're not a part of that 12-team playoff that are opting out of that last game. And I understand why they do it, but it irks me. It really does. And I'm not going to say it's right or wrong. They're making their own decision. But for me, and the era that I love, it irks me that they're missing an opportunity to play with their team, to play another football game. You never know how many more you're going to have. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but that's part of what irks me about the era of the 4-team playoff, 12 and 16.
So I was very torn on what I was going to decide on this, and I think the callers, the argument for the 4-team playoff and the playoff era is the first playoff. It's when Ohio State upset Alabama
as a four seed, in the semis.
Yeah, that was the SEC bias, and here we go. Now they got exposed, and yada yada yada. The problem that I have with that era is that now it includes opt-outs from bowl games. Leonard Fournette happened a couple years later, and then it started the snowball effect.
It includes NIL in the portal.
NIL in the portal, and that's why I would go to the BCS. I think the BCS got it right virtually every time. I think it performed in the 90% plus rate of it got it right.
But I could give you three, four times they left out the number one team in the country. I mean, USC in 03, 04 was Auburn. That's at least two. And then you had – go ahead.
I think USC is the definite one where they had to share the national title. The BCS had one shared national championship, and it was the LSU-USC one. But the BCS also gave me more times than not the right matchup. The semis are usually blowouts in college football when it was four teams, so we didn't need it. It was a waste of time. New Year's Day still had value in the BCS era. Michigan, USC in 2007, you know, that was a big game. I got USC, Texas. It was one of the great national championship games of all time. I didn't need the clutter before it. And then my New Year's Day was still fine, too. I loved the elimination game of Ohio State and Michigan, or the SEC championship game usually eliminated all the other SEC teams, except the one year the BCS was open-minded to having an LSU-Alabama rematch. It did not exclude a conference rematch.
Because it was just computer-based.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's not necessarily open-minded because there was no mind involved.
Exactly.
248-539-9797. Let's get to Scott in Detroit. Scott, good morning. Frozen in time. Pick an era.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Detroit.
What do you got, Scott?
Yeah, I've been watching. I'm 56. I've been watching football for a number of years. I've been a Michigan fan since I was like 10 years old. I mean, I like the old school football, but the new with the 12-team playoff is way better than the old school one or two, maybe four teams, however it used to be. It's way more football for me to watch. I love it. Love Michigan. I love all the California and Oregon transplants with a few of the Pac-12 coming over. It's great.
Think about it now, and I know people bemoan the super conferences. You get Michigan Oregon as a regular season game. You're going to get Michigan USC as a regular season game. I get Texas Georgia as a huge regular season showdown most years. That's better than Michigan Northwestern or Georgia Vandy.
Right.
You know, sprinkle in more heavy hitters in your regular season schedule. And by the way, that's interesting because that crosses generations.
He does. He's a 56-year-old dude.
Who says, give me the modern stuff. But it also goes the other way because Ticket Texter says, I'm closer to Costa's age, but I'm with John on this. I would go pre-BCS, not even close. That's Corey in a car.
Yeah.
So this is not strictly generational.
No, it's not strictly generational, but it's a painful process. And I do think in terms of picking a national champ, yes, we are on the right path. It's a painful process of going from, you know, polls that are voted on and split titles to the BCS where it's a computer. Nobody likes the computer. So we go to a playoff committee and we've got four teams. We do that for a decade. Then we go to 12. We're going to do that for 2 years and we're going to go to 16. I do think we are heading in the right direction. All of the things that surrounding it right now are very uncomfortable. The house settlement, revenue share. In terms of guys opting out, like there's a lot that goes on in college football around it that makes up how we feel about college football at the time. But I do think in the next 5 years, 6-7 years, we are eventually heading to the right system. As long as it's the John Jansen system.
We'll get to it in the 8 o'clock hour. John's perfect college football system, because this exercise proves there has never been a perfect era of college football. John's going to solve all the sports woes. We'll get to it in the 8 o'clock hour. It's 97.1.